Gospel reading from Mark chapter 5, and the text begins at verse 21. And it's a long pericope today. It actually extends all the way through verse 23. Actually, can you pass my phone over so I know the time here, so I don't go too long? Thanks. All the way through verse 43. What's nice about this is in the new lectionary, it's not optional that you read the whole thing. In the previous Lutheran worship lectionary, they chopped out the middle section of the woman with the flow of blood, which sort of made nonsense of the two stories which are to be read together. I'll talk about that in a second. So you do have a long reading today, but the fact that these two stories are brought together, in fact, gives us the entire purpose and meaning of the stories. Where we are in the Gospel of Mark at this point, we are after chapter 4. And that's critical because in chapter 4 we have the parable of the seeds, or the sower who throws out seed, and the different ways that people respond to the preaching of Jesus in his ministry. And so we have going on in chapter 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 are primarily, although not exclusively, how people are responding to Jesus. And so in the background, of course, is who Jesus is. That's always in the background in the Gospel of Mark, and it's finally clarified at the crucifixion. But another theme running throughout the Gospel of Mark is not only who is this man, the Christology, but also how do I respond to him? What should I do in light of the fact that Jesus is Son of God? And that's the theme of this episode from the Gospel of Mark, Jairus and the woman with the flow of blood. Now, it's a really, there's a lot of weird Greek in here, so I'll have to kind of cover a couple things carefully, but you just sort of have to appreciate what a good storyteller Mark is. It's just kind of a fun story, the way he narrates this. So some things we'll have to kind of skim over quickly to get to the point, but let's start at verse 21. Kai dia parasantas tu Yesu. Right away we have a genitive absolute. So after, I guess you'd have to take this as crossing over, in the boat entoploio is the textual variant there. After crossing over in the boat, palin eis to peron synecthe aklos palus epaton. Again, at the other side, a great crowd gathered about him. Not really upon him, but sort of about him, around him. Kai in para tain thalasan, and he was along the sea, so he's kind of walking along the coast here. He's just getting out of the boat. So just as soon as he gets out of the boat, verse 22. Kai erkatai eis, or heis, sorry, ton arkis synagogon onomati yaras. So in comes one, heis there, the numeral with the rough breathing, one of the synagogue rulers, or leaders of the synagogue is probably the better way to say that, named Jairus, or Jairus by name. Kai edon auton pipte pros tu spadas autu, and seeing him, he falls at his feet. Now, right away, what's key about the identification of this Jairus is that he is, you might say, at the top of the food chain. Okay, first of all, he's male. So he is of the, you might say, more able to keep the covenant than females were. Second, not only is he male and able to participate in synagogue life, but he's also one of the leaders of the synagogue. So he has the means. Probably what the leader of the synagogue means is he's sort of one of the sponsors or benefactors of the synagogue. Not that he's a, you know, kind of a rabbi or something, but he's sort of the guy that takes care of, the kind of benefactor, supports it. Monetarily, maybe it even meets in his house, perhaps. In any case, he's the best of the best. Okay, this is a guy that would be looked up to in society. So he falls at Jesus' feet. So far, so good. Verse 23: Kai parakale aton pala legon hati ta thugatrion mu eskatas eke, and he exhorted him pala. Much, a lot. You might almost do this adverbially, continuously. Saying, and here hati is introducing direct discourse. So you'd have to put this in sort of quotation marks. My daughter has an end, you might say, has lastness. so she's near death. Now, the next two clauses are rather odd. Hina elthon epithes tes kerasate, hina sothe kai zese. Now, you have hina clause and another hina clause. The problem is the first one doesn't make any sense if you take it as a subordinate clause indicating purpose, like you usually would with a hina clause. So, in order that you may place, in order that upon coming you may place the hand to her, in order that she may be healed and live. Well, it just makes no sense. My daughter has sickness, in order that you may come. Well, obviously that's not right. What Greek can do on occasion is use hina plus a subjunctive to indicate a request or a command. So come or coming, place your hand on her. And then the second hina plus a subjunctive is in fact the subordinate purpose clause, in order that she may be healed and live. So a little unusual usage there, and of course the scribes messed around with that to make it clear. You can see the textual variance. One note on the verb sozo in verse 23. We often translate that save her in sort of a salvific sense, but it's pretty clear in this context that Jairus wants her to be healed, and it becomes an issue with the woman in the next pericope as well. So verse 24. Stop here for a second. Just notice that Jairus has done everything right. He sees Jesus. He knows what Jesus is able to do. He humbles himself before Jesus. He places his request before him. He's done everything right. Okay. He's acknowledging Jesus as, well, at least implicitly, Son of God. So Jesus responds favorably to the man's prayer or man's request. Kai apelthen met autou, and he went away with him. Kai akalithe auto aklas palus kai synethlebon auton. This next sentence actually might go with the next paragraph, but it doesn't really matter how much. It's sort of transitional. And a large crowd kept on following him and pressing about him. So it's this durative idea with the imperfects. He's kind of got this mob continuously around him and jostling about and bumping into him, and you know, so this tumult, you might say, going down toward Jairus' house. So while this tumult is making its way down to Jairus' house, verse 25. Kai gune usa en rese hamatas dodeka ete. And a woman being in a flow of blood, or with a flow of blood, in an accusative extent of time for 12 years. So a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years. And long introduction to it, to her actually, verse 26. Kai pala pathisa hupo palon yatron, kai dapanesasa tapar autes panta, kai maiden afalesa, or I'm sorry, afalethesa ala malon esto keran elthisa. Long stuff there, okay? And having suffered much, so aorist participle, by many, maybe the better word here is healers. Doctors is a little too positive, perhaps. Doctors weren't the same kinds of people we have today. So she suffered at the hands of many healer types. And another aorist participle, having spent, having dapanaod, everything of hers, parotes, and aphalesa maiden, improving nothing, ala malon, rather, you might almost do this, much rather, having come into the worse, Charon there, into the worse. So, long introduction to the woman. Why does Mark spend so much time on the woman? Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, societally, she's at the complete opposite end of the social scale as Jairus. She's a woman, so she's not able to participate in the synagogue life. She's not a ruler of the synagogue who is able to be a benefactor and support the synagogue. Instead, she's spent all her money on doctors, so she has nothing left. She has a flow of blood, so she's unclean. She cannot fulfill the obligations of the law because of her condition. She's sort of in a perpetual state of uncleanness. This woman has absolutely nothing going for her, and no one has helped her any. She has no one to take care of her, apparently. The doctors have just, you know, squeezed all the cash they can out of her, and she's getting worse. So complete opposite end of the spectrum. And this woman also hears about Jesus. So verse 27, akousasa peri to Yesu, having heard about Jesus, elthusa enta aklo apisthen hepsato to ematiu autu. Having come in the crowd from the rear, apisthen there, from the rear, she touched, from optimi in aorist tense, she touched his garment. Opto takes the genitive, so to ematiu in the genitive there. So having come from the back, she touched his garment. Now, notice again the different manner of approaching Jesus. Jairus comes up and greets him sort of to his face, falls at his feet, does this, you know, show of respect and submission. The woman doesn't dare approach Jesus, but comes up from the back. Why does she do this? Mark gives us one of his gars that explains the previous action. Elegan garhatu an apsumai kan tan hamation autu sothesumai. So for she was saying, or kept on saying, that, quote, if I touch, kan here is an elision of kai plus aeon. So if I touch, if even, or maybe if only, his garments, so there's the genitive ton hamation again, with opto. If I touch only his garments, so thesomai, future passive, I will be healed. Okay. Now, what's interesting is she indicates, even verbally, a statement of faith about Jesus. She knows that Jesus can heal. In fact, he is so powerful that only his cloak is necessary to touch in order to be healed. It might be tempting to sort of posit that the woman is sort of a little off, or, you know, thinks strange things, like the garment is magical or something like that. It's pretty clear, though, that she understands it's coming from Jesus, but that his power, his divinity, if you will, is so obvious and present that even his garment, even being near him, is enough. So she touches, verse 28, or 27 she touched, 28 explains why, 29, kai oithus exeranthe he pege tu haimatos autes, kai agno tosamati hati yatai apotes mastagas. So immediately, right, her request was granted. Immediately the flow of blood dried up, or withered, dried up, her flow of blood dried up, and agno, she knew, that's the aorist of gnosko. She knew in body, so she knew in her body, I mean, she just felt it, that yatai, she is healed from the disease. So she knew, boom, touched his cloak, it's all done. Now, verse 30, kaiothus, hoyesus, epignus, en auto, tain, ex autu, dynamin, Exalthuson. So Jesus, epignuser, the participle of epignosko, Jesus, knowing in himself the power had gone out, exalthuson, from him, epistrophes, enta aklo elegan, looking around in the crowd, he kept on saying, a good use of the imperfect as a durative here, tismu hepsato ton hematian. Who touched my garments? Who touched my cloaks? So he knew something happened, and he knew power had gone out. Okay. 31. Kai elegon auto. Here's the disciples. You know, the disciples are always sort of the foil for the characters that you meet throughout the gospel. And whenever you have different characters or people coming into the gospel narrative, and the disciples also present, the disciples are always doing the stupid things, okay? And the characters in a story are always doing the right things. So the disciples play the role of keystone cop at this point, right? So his disciples, elegon auto, kept on saying to him, blepes ton aklon sin flabanta se kai leges tismu epsato, right? You see the crowd pressing about you, and yet you say, who touched me? That's a stupid thing to say, Jesus. Come on, give me a break. You know, everybody's touching you. And actually, that's kind of the point. Lots of people are touching Jesus, but only one person touched Jesus in faith. And when that one person touched Jesus in faith, something happened. And the disciples didn't even expect it, anticipate it, suspect that anything could happen. So Jesus, of course, in verse 32, completely ignores the disciples. Kai peri ablepeto idein tein tuto poiesasan. And he kept looking around, idein the infinitive, to see tein poiesasan, the participle, feminine participle, interestingly, to see the one who had done this thing. So it's interesting. Does the feminine participle indicate that Jesus knew it was a woman? You know, I guess you just have to do it in Greek. But anyway, Jesus knew that somebody did this intentionally. So verse 33, Heregune phobethaisa kai tremusa, right? And the woman, because she was fearful, probably an explanatory participle here, because she was fearful and trembling, a duia ha gegenen auto. Here, this is a strange form. This is the perfect participle of oida. Because she was in a state of knowing ha gegenen, what had happened to her. Okay, so because she knew what had happened to her. Elfen kai prosopesan auto kai epen auto pasan tein aletheia. Came and fell before him, just as Jairus had done, and said to him all the truth. So she fesses up, this is what happened. What does Jesus do? Is he ticked off? No, in fact, the complete opposite. He praises her. Hod epenaute thugater he pistasu sesakin se. Daughter, and here by the use of the term daughter, it's an indication of kinship, relationship, acceptance. Not woman, right, but daughter. Daughter, your faith, sesokense, perfect tense, healed you. Not saved you here, obviously. It's talking about healing, although that's obviously implicit. But what's the point of Jesus? Well, let's finish it. Hupaga eis erenin kai isthi hugies apo teis mastigasu. Go in peace. And the imperative of Amy here, be hugies, whole or sound from your disease. So go in peace and be healed or whole from your disease. So Jesus takes the pains to make sure the woman and, in fact, the disciples and everyone in the crowd knew what had happened, and that the woman was exonerated and even praised for her faith. So she knew who Jesus was. She knew that he was the place to go. No one else could help her. Only Jesus could. She had faith in him, and so acted on that faith, and her request was granted. An extremely positive example of faith here. So humble that she doesn't even feel worthy to come to Jesus and ask, yet she goes anyway and knows that his role, he has come, bringing the kingdom of God, and he comes only to give, not to condemn. And so with that confidence, she goes, she touches, and she is healed. And Jesus praises her for doing exactly that. So a positive example of faith. Now we go back to Jairus. What Mark is doing here is actually a common narrative technique in Mark. He begins a story, cuts in with another story that's related, and concludes the first story after the second story is completed. Scholars like to call this an intercalation, or you can call it a sandwich, two pieces of bread with a piece of cheese inside or something. The point being, if it's like a sandwich, you have to take a bite of the whole thing, right? You can't eat just the bread or just the cheese. You got to bite the whole thing to get the meaning. So we have Pistis with the woman, and now we have Jairus, who we're going to find out whether or not he has Pistis. Okay? So two people on the opposite ends of the spectrum, both of whom are responding to Jesus. So verse 35, the Jairus story resumes. Etiatu laluntis erkantai apo tu arki synagogu legantis hote he thugater su apethene. Another genitive absolute here. While he was still speaking, you get the genitive substantive and the genitive participle without an article. So while he was still speaking, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house, you'd have to say there, saying that, again, quote, your daughter, apothenescod, aorist tense, your daughter died. Why te ete skeles ton didaskalon? Why still are you troubling the teacher? So leave Jesus alone. He can't do you any good anymore. Now, here's a place where you wish you had a camera and you saw the expression on Jairus' face. Obviously, with news of his daughter coming in, it probably wasn't a very positive expression. And based on Jesus' response, I think that's how you have to sort of fill in that narrative blank. What does Jesus say? Haude Jesus parakousas ton lagan laluminon. Lege to archisynagogo. I keep stumbling over that word. Archisynagogo. Okay. But Jesus, overhearing the statement having been spoken, the utterance having been spoken, says to the ruler of the synagogue, ignoring those who came, right? Me phobou manon pistoia. Do not fear, only believe. Pistoia, the imperative. Now, unfortunately, in English, we use two different words for faith and believe. That's the noun and the verb. But keep in mind, in verse 34, the woman's pistis healed her, and now Jesus says to Jairus, keep pistoioing. So it's the same theme. Both individuals are being encouraged in their faith, and it's helpful to kind of point that out, that they're not two different things going on here. So Jairus apparently accepts Jesus' offer. He goes with him. So verse 37, Kai uk afeken udina medautu suna kolothesai heme ton patron kai yachabon kai yoanen ton alafon yachabu. So he did not permit, from afiemi, he did not permit anyone to follow along the infinitive, aorist passive infinitive, suna kolotheo, to follow along with him, except Amay, Peter, and James, and John, the brother of James. So there's our big three that constantly see Jesus do his work. 38, Kai erkantai es tonakon tu arkes synagogu. Did I get it right that time? Kai theore thurabon, kai kleontas, kai alalazans pala. And they come into the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and they see Thurabon is like tumult or confusion, and Kleontas is weeping, and Alalazantas is just alalala. It's sort of wailing. I don't even know if you can translate it. It's alalala. You know how you see on TV sometimes, you know, in the Middle East. Well, they're just wailing, and in Pala, mush. So there's just crying and carrying on and all those kinds of things, right? Obviously, there's a dead little girl in the house. So Jesus now, interestingly, has a little comment to the wailers, and approaching Kai Eselthener, coming in, Legaotois, he says to them, Te thorobaisa Kai Kleita, why are you tumulting and weeping? To parian uk apethanen ala kathude. The child did not die, rather she sleeps. Now, interesting comment. You know, is she really just sleeping, or is this part of the motif of the hiddenness of Jesus and Mark? Probably the latter. Those who don't know who Jesus is are not allowed to understand or to see his signs. So he's kind of throwing them off a little bit here. Of course, the crowd, the mourners, think this is stupid. Kategalan auto, and they derided him. They laughed at him. Katagalao is the verb there. So they don't think much of Jesus' interpretation of the event. Atasta ekbalen, ekbalon, pantas, paralambane, ton patera, tu, padiu, kai ten matera, kai tu smeda tu, kai ais peruatai, hapu, ein ta padien. So he, casting everyone aside, took along paralambane, the father of the child and the mother, interestingly. So his mother is brought into the room, not just Jairus. And those with him, that's the three disciples, and they enter into where the child was. 41. Kai kratesas tes keras tu padiu legeo te. And grasping, or krateo, seizing the hand of the child, he says to her, Talitha kum, right, there's your Aramaic little girl, ha'esten meth er, this is a tough one, Mether me noiomenon, which, having been translated, is to korasion soy lego egere. Now, Mark throws a few extra words in there. But, little child, to you I say, get up. It just says, Talithakum, little girl, get up. But, you know, you get the point. Little girl, to you I say, get up. And at the command of Jesus, notice, and here's something pretty key. We skim over words like goithus pretty quickly. But if you look at back at verse 29, as soon as the woman touched Jesus' cloak, immediately the flow of blood dried up. In verse 42, as soon as Jesus speaks, immediately, aneste to korasion kai perepate. Immediately, the little girl got up and she walked around. So the power of Jesus in evidence here. And then one of these Mark and Gars, ein gar eton dodeca. For she was 12 years old. Now, obviously, gar here is not an explanatory gar explaining why she got up and walked. It's sort of one of these asides. You know, the girl was 12 years old. Why the heck Mark tells us she was 12 years old, I have absolutely no idea. He likes filling in details. I don't know why it's there. If you got something, feel free. But anyway, kai exestesan oithus, which is maybe isn't there and probably shouldn't be, kai exestesan ekstase megale. And existemi means they were out of their mind and had great ecstasy, is literally trance. They're transfixed. They're like shocked, so shocked they can't move. It's not ecstasy where you're like delirious kind of thing. Greek ekstase is transfixed and in a trance kind of a thing. So they're you know, they're just like shocked or stunned and can't even move. And who is that, of course? It's the mother, father, Peter, James, and John. Right. So verse 43, apparently because nobody can move, Jesus says, kai dies dilato autois pala hina mides gnoi tuto, kai epen dothene aute phage. So he ordered them a lot in order that they make known. Gnoi there is the subjunctive, aorist subjunctive of gnosko. Just forget it. Aorist subjunctive of gnosko. In order that they make this thing known to no one, or that no one, sorry, make this thing known. And he said to be given to her, or he ordered to be given to her to eat, something to eat. So, again, this command not to report what had happened probably goes along with Jesus telling them that the little girl is just sleeping, you know, to kind of throw him off a little bit. He doesn't want this known. It's only for those who have faith in him. And then to give her something to eat, I think is rather significant. She's not a ghost. She's not a phantasm. It's not some kind of an illusion. She's whole and sound and complete, and life will go on for her, and so she needs food, sustenance, because she's back to normal. And then the story ends. You know, in Markan fashion, there's no sort of moral of the story or conclusion to the thing. It just stops. So we readers are left to kind of sort out what the heck is all this about. And again, because these two stories are sandwiched together, we have to read them over and against each other. So several things are in view. Obviously, the different social status of the two people, yet Jesus has come for both. And his reign, his kingdom is for both. The second thing that's rather interesting is the woman who is of lower social status and less likely to be positively viewed in that society actually is has a stronger faith. She doesn't need to be encouraged. She knows, she goes, and she gets. You know, it's really, whereas Jairus needs to be helped along by Jesus. At the same time, it is helpful to see both characters in terms of, well, you might say the struggles that we face as we follow Jesus. So challenges come up, and this is going back to the parable in chapter 4, the worries of life, the concerns for the things of life. Come up and sometimes choke the word, right? Yet what does Jesus do here? For the woman who has faith, he grants her request, right? This is what he's come to do. But for the one who is struggling, for Jairus, who receives this devastating news, Jesus offers encouragement. Not, you know, kind of buck up or something like this, or gee, isn't that too bad, see you later kind of a thing. But he offers encouragement to keep on believing, even though it seems like it's a stupid thing to do, even though the people from your own household told you to stop bothering me, even though the mourners think I'm stupid, right? Keep on believing. And Jesus drags him along until he grants what Jairus really needs. What's interesting is the woman asks for the healing and gets it. Jairus never asks for it, but he gets it anyway. And I think it's a nice model or picture of, the struggle of faith. And where does Jesus fit into this? That as we follow this man, wherever it goes, wherever he goes, his kingdom, we live under his reign, to use Luther's catechism image. We live under him and his reign, and he provides for us. Our job is to believe, to keep following this guy with a confident faith, and even if it's an unconfident faith, to allow him to strengthen us until he takes us to the place where he wants us to be. Kind of interesting right now, I'm teaching the book of James, and right in the first chapter there's this question of what to do when facing trials. And the encouragement of the book of James is basically what Jesus does to Jairus. If anybody lacks wisdom, let him ask, and it will be given to him. Because God is the one who gives. That's his job. He's the Father of lights who only gives good things later on in chapter 1. And it's a kind of a level 1, you know, discourse on the narrative here in Mark chapter 5. All right. Thanks.